Hello, this is Chris O'Brien, the CEO of BioRossi. Welcome to episode 23 of Few and Far Between, conversations on the cutting edge of clinical research. On today's episode, we'll explore the infrastructure of clinical trials in India with our guest, Dr. Arun Bhatt. Dr. Bhatt is one of the most sought-after consultants for clinical trials in India. In fact, some call him the father of clinical research in India. But he continues to refer to himself as a student in a very dynamic and exciting industry and environment. Hosting today's episode is BioRossi's Executive Director for Asia Regional Operations, Dr. Sagar Patil. Hi, Sagar. It's great to have you on the podcast today.
Thank you, Chris.
How was your conversation with Dr. Bhatt?
It was great to reconnect with Dr. Bhatt. He was actually the first person who interviewed me for my first job in the clinical trials industry.
That's amazing. I have now an image of a young Sagar Patil entering the industry and being mentored. This is already a win for me. Okay, so tell me more. What did you guys discuss?
Well, this episode was a great opportunity to catch up with him and discuss the history of clinical research in India. Many in the industry ask, what makes India a smart and viable setting for today's clinical trials?
Yeah, I think that's an extremely important question today. In fact, I think many of our listeners, particularly in the United States or in Europe, may not be aware of how clinical trials have developed in India in the past few years.
Absolutely. And our conversation did sort of touch upon those points as well. So as we discussed, we went into great detail about successful strategies for clinical trials in India, from overcoming potential obstacles to trial best practices for today and tomorrow.
Thanks, Sagar. I'm really looking forward to the episode. Okay, let's get going. Let's start the podcast.
Welcome, Dr. Bhatt. It's always a pleasure talking to you, and we are honored to have you for this podcast. Probably I'll refer to you as Sir because I'm more comfortable since our association has been so long, almost about 20 years back. And I remember I had my first interviews with you and some of the other leaders within Pfizer. I'm really happy that you gave me the opportunity. That was my gateway into this field of clinical research industry. And that's where my journey started. So thank you for that opportunity. And here I am again discussing with you. It's always great talking to you at any forum, any platform that we meet. And we are now here again for this podcast. So welcome.
Thank you, Sagar. I would say even for me, it's a great opportunity to connect with you again, because I know that when we started the industry way back in 2003 and maybe a little beyond that, a large number of young, bright professionals have joined from different fields, and that has made our industry vibrant and really successful. So I'm very happy to reconnect with you on this discussion on where India is and where India can go in terms of clinical trials and clinical development.
Thank you very much, sir. Absolutely agree. And we have seen all the ups and downs in this journey over the past two decades. And obviously, we are also evolving, and I'm sure with the guidance from all the industry stalwarts like you, we would definitely continue to excel in conducting clinical trials in India. Sir, you have been around in the industry for more than three decades, I think so approximately around more than four decades. And you have had various roles, with starting with a medical advisor and then also heading a CRO. You have worked as a medical advisor with a large multinational company. So your contributions have been outstanding. I think so we can start with hearing from you about your journey in clinical research, and then we'll take it forward from there.
In fact, Sagar, when I look back at my journey, it's almost now four decades, but I think there's one thing which is constant in the journey. I still think I'm a student of clinical research. I learn every time there are changes. So obviously, as you mentioned, we have gone through a variety of roles, learning from different people. Started as a clinical research scientist, I was doing phase one that time. And when I look back at current phase one being done in India and outside India, I feel, okay, yes, things have changed. The principles have not changed, but the way we do things have changed, dramatically. And that was my learning over the last four decades. Then when I moved to a role of medical advisor, became medical director in Novartis, I think that time I kind of integrated regulatory work with marketing support functions. And I think that was very important because ultimately we are in the field of clinical development, and ultimately to bring out new drug in the market. So unless you understand the dynamics of marketing and regulatory aspects, the clinical development probably becomes just one-way street. So I was very happy that I picked up all that along the way. Obviously today things are very fast. I'm sure if I was as young as you, I would also become director very fast. But actually it took me some time because things were different that And in those days, we had, there are a lot of roles today and we did all the roles all into one. But today I realized that, if I were to be, today's generation of clinical research, let's say project manager, I know that I will have different people doing different roles. But in those days, we did everything. So, for example, we would set up clinical trials, we would write protocols, we would even it was probably not correct, but even prepare the dispensing of drugs and even write report and publication, and even look at pharmacovigilance, because in those days PVG was a very very small science in terms of what we could do. In India, for example, we were largely focused on post-marketing safety and reporting from the medical professionals, and not much of clinical research PVG. Today, of course, I think today we have big focus on clinical trial safety, is a major thing. So that is a big change compared to what we saw. But yes, principles are still same. How can you make the drug safer, keep it effective? And obviously, now we have moved into different areas. And of course, the journey continued, but then I moved into a different field. That might was kind of a learning business. When I became CEO of a herbal company, I learned business because, I realized that, as a scientist in clinical development today, you have to be, kind of all-rounded. So obviously, it's better today to start with an MBA if you have, but if you don't have it, you learn it by doing it. So, getting into a company, setting up research and development, working on, working with government, a lot of things we had to do. And then I think that was all very useful when I moved into a classical CRO. And then obviously these all experiences now useful as a consultant. People sometimes ask me that, what can you do? I said, well, I'm a jack of many trades and master of a few. So I don't claim to do everything. For example, if somebody asked me to file a regulatory submission, I'll say, okay, I know what is to be done, but I don't do it myself. I would rather have an expert really submit the dossier and do it. So a lot of changes in the environment of pharma industry has occurred in the last 4 years. Clinical trials have moved from just simple trials to now more of a study which is ethical, scientific, regulatory and operational. So we'll probably talk about that when we maybe move to more detailed discussions on where we are in India right now. My journey is, in a way, somehow I've been fortunate to see the journey of India as part of my journey and vice versa.
So I would like to ask about your thoughts on what were the success factors that time, and probably many of those would have continued till now as well. So maybe you can just throw some lights on, what were the success factors that sort of had this industry really boom during that period.
So if I go back from my time in 81 joining industry to almost 15 years, 96, we are still doing the trials which were good, but not yet GCP, because there was no GCP. So onwards, I would look at in terms of where we are now. So if I look at the major blocks, 1996, then 2005, 2010, 2015, and of course 2019-20. So I'll just like to reflect on these years to discuss where we are and what we did. When I was at Novartis, I think we were one of the first, other companies like Pfizer and others, one of the first GCP trials we did, which was a concurrent phase 3 for conditions like more prevalent in India, like malaria or breast cancer. Obviously, those trials require a lot of negotiations with the regulators, because the laws were not yet allowing concurrent trials. So we had to really negotiate and make them understand that why India is important and how much can we do in India. But those early investments done by big pharma were useful when 2005, the regulations changed first time. We got the new Schedule Y to the regulations or law in India for clinical trials. And now it's called the New Drug Clinical Trials and Rules 2019. That Schedule Y change was, arriving formally concurrent phase 2-3 trials. So that became a big boost to the global pharma to look at India as one of the countries where clinical development can be supported. So the India's advantages were already known. We a large number of patients who are treatment now, well-trained clinicians with UK, US, European exposure and willing to do research, IT and technology support, and obviously a young industry, coming up in a big way. So we had the advantages, but without the regulatory support, we could not have done much. Along with that, even the patent rules changed. We moved from process to product patent, and that was a major thing. So that is a kind of milestone, 2005. But as it happens in a developing country when you suddenly become free from the clutches of regulations, you suddenly feel that, I can do everything. From 2005 to 10, we really started growing in number of trials. I can recollect definitely that 2010, we had 500 trials in India. So about 250 were global, 250 were local. I mean, the numbers might look small from a US or European angle, but for India, which was only doing some 30, 20, 30, 40, 50, you know, global trials before 2005, more into that league very fast. But obviously that was a bit of a deviation because people who started working on it were, you know, very fresh, GCP trained recently, unaware of, you know, the global nuances, the global standards. I mean, everybody was learning and doing. So I think we did make some mistakes. The focus was on speed, and that's why the ethics and the patient safety did get kind of, I would not say deliberately suffered, but more like, you know, they became what happened on the way, we did not realize, no? And obviously that led to a lot of media and legal challenges. That was a major kind of, you know, a big challenge for India, because we suddenly realized that what we were doing was maybe practically fine, but may not have been acceptable, no, if continue that way. And that led to a major change, no, in 2015. Obviously, interim period led to a lot of media and legal issues, and that led to a major change. So 2015, we started, no, looking at the regulations freshly. So what we said today in 2019, the new drug rules, actually most things were happening in 2015. So we kind of amended the regulations to, you know, ensure human protection and safety. Now these are given in a GCP trial. This is not new. But then for a country like India, no, which is not used to, you know, a formal kind of very open system like European GCP, you know, where things are kept open. No, I mean, people understand what is to be done. But well, here I think we had to tell people what is. So they developed a lot of ethical strengthening of the rules. So this registration of ethics committees was first kind of a rule. Developed audiovisual consent became another rule. And obviously third was compensation for, you know, serious events. And obviously these three major things appeared to be that time, you know, quite, I would say, drastic to people who are not here, and even the people in India felt that, oh, it's a very drastic change and how can we comply. And so that became, you know, kind of a small plateau for some time. I wouldn't say there was a setback, but people started looking at it very freshly. There was also regulatory inspection started that time and audit started, and obviously there were actions taken by regulators. So all this kind of led to a bit of, you know, can we do it, or did we do it correctly, or how can we change the, and that ultimately has come to, you know, 2019. The new drugs and clinical trials rules, which actually are very comprehensive. When I look back at the rules, they obviously are covering all the ground almost 14 years, 2005 to 2019, and trying to put all things required into a kind of, you know, proper rule framework. So there's no scope of ambiguity. And idea was to make comprehensive rules to streamline clinical trial conduct, compliance to GCP and regulations. So this became a kind of, you know, major milestone, which I think is now helping us in last 2-3 years when we have come across, you know, COVID pandemic. So maybe, you know, I would just, you know, ask Sagar, what do you think? You are a younger person who has lived through this reality. So maybe you have some thoughts, and then we can have, you know, a further discussion. I may look at it from a different angle, but you are inside the system and you are still kind of, you know, always challenged to do things in the right way for a global, you know, company like BioRassi or the earlier companies like, you know, Pfizer. So where do you think, you know, have we done good?
Surely, sir. I agree with you that after the 210 sort of a peak for India, when there were some changes in the regulations around 2013, wherein they introduced the different aspects like audiovisual as well as compensation. And that time, there was a sort of a knee-jerk reaction with many of the pharma companies as well as CROs, as well as studies coming from global clinical trials coming to India. And there was mostly a sort of wait and watch approach adopted by most of them. And that's where I think people like you and, you know, bodies like ISCR sort of came together, and they had these deliberations to the health authorities. And probably around after 2015, they became more open to dialogue with the industry people and taking the feedback and also support at times, because I know that there were some trainings conducted for those officials, whether it was GCP or whether it was site audits, which also helped them understand these things in more depth. And they were trying to sort of learn from the other developed countries what their regulatory agencies are doing and what is the process being followed, post which the 2019 NDCT 2019 rules came into force. So from my perspective, I would say that these rules definitely brought in a lot of clarity. There was quite a few simplifications, as well as there was some ease of conducting the trials in the terms of, I would say that they had introduced the pre-submission meetings as well as the post-approval meetings, and there were a few things wherein they said that indigenous molecules developed would have approvals within 30 days, and they gave a formal sort of a timeline for global clinical trial approvals, which I would say gave a lot of confidence not only just to the Indian pharma companies, but as well as people from outside India who wanted to come to India with their products and had to sort of consider India for their clinical trials. So I would say even after 2019 and subsequently they came up with some other notifications which kept on giving the clarity, and also they introduced about online submissions of the clinical trial applications. There was clarity about how we can approach having the regulatory scenario navigated, and during the conduct phase also, whatever was the post-approval compliances that were required, whether it is submissions of the ethics committee approvals, all these things were streamlined. We have still not reached there, but at least we are on the right track to sort of improvement and see to it that the clinical trial environment in India remains conducive to global study participation. So at least I am happy, because as you rightly said, I was there before these rules were formed, in between during the rules also, and then later on also I could see the whole cycle. But at least as of now, when I look around, I think so in one of the recent reports, after China in Asia region, we have the highest number of trials. And even during COVID and just after the post-COVID era, we still have a high number of trials being sort of conducted in India, which is a very, very positive from my side. And one another aspect that you also touched upon is about the compensation for any injury, medical reimbursement and compensation. So that was something introduced after the 2013 rule. And though initially it looked like this is very, very difficult to be followed, accepted and tracked, and how do we calculate about how much compensation is required and things like that. But I think the regulators and the industry bodies took cognizance of these things and the requirement that there needs to be further clarification and information required. And that's where they came out with new notifications, and they gave us more information about how this can be calculated. Because then we were sure that, you know, if we have to sort of take a particular study, and also initially, I think so, there was no clarity on whether the compensation and the reimbursements are to be given for all the injuries or only the related to IP injuries were to be compensated. And that was later clarified in the 2019 rules, wherein it was just about that you reimburse and compensate for the related events, and that helped. And when we did some background work about other countries having similar kind of policies, we realized that the number of payments that were done or the number of events that were to be compensated, it was not something of a high number. It was still within the range of other countries, like, you know, whether it's Russia, South Africa, China or any other country. We are still on par with that. So nothing very gross or to be concerned about. It's something we are following as the other countries. And probably it's also to safeguard the patient's interest. So in a way, that was a positive move. And in the long term, definitely this would also help.
I think that's a good way, because you are inside. And let me just first touch upon what you talked about, compensation. I mean, I think just to rest assure everybody that when the rules came, it looked like, that are we doing too much? Is it like, more like no fault compensation or what? But later on, I mean, last year we got some data out. Somebody did a, kind of a specific request to the government. The data are quite pragmatic. I just looked at the data that for the injury and deaths last 4 years, that is 2017 to 20. In case of death, relationship between the event and the clinical trial was about 8% of events. So it was not really that we had no lot of events which are considered related. And the average compensation is about 900,000 Indian rupees. Maybe it's about $12,000, if I'm not wrong. That could be the number. And the injury is about 9% of events are considered related. And I think it's much lower, about 300,000, about $4,000 per injury. And I think the process is set now. One would wonder how it happened. So frankly, when I look back, the GCB training, which the industry and academia actively looked at, started doing it. I recollect in 2003, when I was doing one of the first workshops along with my other colleagues, we had difficulty in getting 40 participants to attend this workshop. And today, I think when we announce a workshop of GCB, I think last week there was a GCB workshop done by Indian Society for Clinical Research. It was a webinar. There were 300 participants. So obviously, there's a lot of hunger for learning these things. I've personally been doing a lot of training of education of ethics committees. We have guidelines for national guidelines for stem cell research and stem cell products. We have similar guidelines for gene therapy. We have medical device regulations and rules. We have biosimilar regulations and rules. So obviously, all these are supporting indirectly what is happening right now. So when I looked at pandemic 2020, obviously a pandemic was a bad thing for every country. If we had not done this, we would have really suffered during pandemic, because when we talk about success of India doing vaccine research and supporting many countries in the world with vaccines was possible because the ground prepared for doing big trials in India. Although we have not had big trials in India for many years, most have been global trials done in India and local trials done in India for regulatory support. And I think the numbers are not big. I mean, an average clinical trial in India would not be more than 200, 300, maybe 500 patients, or maybe 1,000 patients. But in vaccine studies, I think we have had about 25,000 participants in the clinical trials. And the results have been kind of accepted, published, good. So obviously, the whole, system worked because there was a need to do something very fast. Along with that, I think because of this other rules coming into play, like devices, I think large interest in developing diagnostics. So a lot of companies in India, have developed also diagnostics. So 2020 became a very harbinger of everything coming together, how we can do things fast. Obviously, everybody had to work fast. So we got used to, ethics committee meetings were always a problem. I've been part of ethics committees. Physical meetings, so you have to travel, you have to meet and you spend time. But once it became known that we can have Zoom meetings, I think ethics committees also became smarter and faster in terms of reviewing things, deciding things. And the whole, the problems of 2010, where clinical trials and research were considered, do we do it and does a developing country do it, or is it harmful or is it risky? It all changed, In 2020, so many emergency use approvals were given, the expert committees were working, and overall the clinical development became a buzzword. I mean, I think today, at least in the last 2 years, I have hardly seen media criticizing clinical trials and clinical research. Now I think their stance is more pragmatic. Participate in global drug developments, have collaborations, because obviously no country can do everything on its own. So collaborations, new ideas. I mean, for example, Sagar, you mentioned about this new drug rules. By allowing Indian drug companies developing drugs, getting an approval in 30 days for clinical trials. Now, when they say Indian company, they don't mean only India-based companies. They have accepted that companies will be working in joint collaboration with American company or a Canadian company or European company. So you can have a mix of discovery and development shared by two different continents. But to get approval in 30 days, almost like the FDA has no 30-day rule, is a kind of a big game changer. I'm sure as a kind of a global CRO, you are probably getting this more into your queries and questions and RFPs.
Yes. In fact, many of these sponsors, whether it's in the US or in the Europe, they tend to sort of check upon whether India can be a potential participant in a particular trial. And as you rightly mentioned, the regulatory environment has evolved and become very, very conducive, wherein we can sort of invite US and European sponsors to have their trials being placed in India. Whenever we get these RFPs and we have this initial meeting with the sponsors in the Europe or any other part of the world, many a times they have a little bit of a skepticism around the data quality in India. Would you like to throw some light about how we can sort of communicate about the data quality in India?
See, two things have happened in post-2015. One is, of course, there's a shift of attitude. The earlier fast trials, now to more of doing fast, but high-quality, ethical, conductive trials. So, today sometimes you will say, okay, there are few investigators who are willing to do it, but I think I would rather have a few and quality than have many and have problems. So, there is a lot of shift of attitude. So, ethics committee has become more conscious of its responsibility. I mean, they are like the local regulators. Now, all this has led to definitely improvement of quality overall. Just to digress, I've been answering questions on good clinical practice since 2003, almost now, 15 years, almost 17, 20 years. Now, I've seen the change in questions. Earlier questions were about simple things like consent, ethics committee approval, do I require approval or not. The later ones are more about technology, newer fields, gene therapy. So, I can see the shift even in the eyes of people who are working there, that quality is kind of given. It's not to be compromised. So, they don't ask on quality issues. I mean, one can look at it both ways, because developed country might have a different approach in some areas. But overall approach is that if I am doing work in India, I am an investigator, I am ethics committee, I am actually supposed to do things which are global in nature and standards. So that's one major thing happened. And there's also a lot of government oversight. For example, in COVID, government set up a task force which is working directly with the Prime Minister's office, and they started driving the whole research in COVID. Very top scientists, and of course, even ICMR Director General is a member of that. So they are kind of driving this in terms of making India a kind of attractive, you know, proposition for research and science. And obviously, quality has to be there as part of this. A lot of training has gone in. But coming back to, you know, what questions you asked about quality, somebody would say, well, how do we judge quality? What is the barometer? Obviously, I'm sure most companies like yours and others are doing a lot of audits. So they have an idea of audits and quality of that. But I only rely on US FDA inspections. And I think I've been looking at inspections since 2005. And now about now, almost now 17 years down the line, 65 sites have been inspected in India so far in last about 17 years. And major inspections findings are NAI, no action indicated. That is 60% of site data were NAI. In fact, I personally have experienced this. In my own CR, when I was running a CRO, we have had no inspections and both were NAI. And that we were worried. The public hospital, a lot of challenges, you know, and issues and crowding and what will be the level. But FDA's professional inspection was saying NAI. I mean, they are not worried about the location. They wanted to look at the data and the data were part of global submission and they were accepted. VAI are 37%, that is 24. And again, most of the VAIs are actually are not a problem. I mean, I've seen in VAI letters or no communications, they expect the PI, the investigator to kind of make corrections for future. It's not a, you know, kind of a hindrance to current drug submission or development. No? Yeah, we have had two OAIs, small number, but yes, I would say we have to watch out. I've been looking at data of FDA inspections of across the world published in different publications. I find that you will find NAI 50%, 49% and about 1% OAI. Now we have more of NAI, we have 60% NAI, the rest I think are VAI. So I think we are at the moment, I think as comparable to any other country in the world in terms of site quality of conduct of clinical trials, which are part of global submissions. Obviously, any sponsor, any CRO has to be really, you know, invest, you know, in training. So I'm sure the training which you do, you know, for the investigators in the meetings, the monitoring visits, the audit, and I think obviously medical oversight, they are all like kind of, you know, very important. In fact, I know that one major change which brought about by regulators now was in the rules itself, they put down that ethics committee should be doing oversight beyond the initial approval. Earlier, you know, ethics committee would approve the project and they would forget about it. I know ethics committees are now doing monitoring of clinical trials. That is an additional monitoring step beyond what the industry does. And that obviously keeps on the ball of the quality. So quality and conduct, I think, especially more on the ethical side, have become no big change. And the culture is slowly developing to continue to develop further and further.
That's wonderful to know, because with the FDA inspections, the observation numbers, if we have to compare it to that, we are at par with any of the other nations. So that's something definitely can give a lot of assurance. And what you said, sir, to that, probably I can also add that over these last few years, the investigators, number of investigators, trained investigators that we have, the numbers have increased. They have good knowledge about how to conduct clinical research, and as well as they are well aware of the regulations, and also the site staff, their experience, and they know about how to ensure protocol compliance. In fact, I can share my experience that many of the hospitals now have dedicated clinical research departments and they have dedicated people who just look at clinical trials. So even in terms of resources, they are not stretched. Thereby, they can focus on exclusively working on these studies and ensure that they are doing a good quality job. And one more point was that the regulations brought the Clinical Trial Registry of India. I mean, that was made mandatory that all the trials has to be listed there, so that it does not sort of fall out of any ethics committee's oversight or the regulator's oversight. So I think so all these were very positive moves.
But one more thing I thought, you know, which has happened in last 2-3 years, you know, I mean, which is a positive outcome of, you know, pandemic. I mean, some years back, you know, the society and every patient, you know, were worried and concerned about a clinical trial. You know. They would fear a clinical trial. In fact, I just saw a survey done in a hospital amongst people who took part in vaccine trials. And there are a lot of people who are young who are saying, well, we would like to take part in trials because it's going to help, you know, not only us, but also others. So there is some kind of, you know, turning happening because of this pandemic. So, I mean, pandemic is bad, but I could look at, you know, that for a country like India, the pandemic has become, you know, very boost in terms of, you know, attitudinal change, you know, a paradigm shift, you know, in terms of attitude to, you know, drug development, clinical trials. I mean, there's a feeling that, okay, we should be part of this global drug development. And we should do something which is the quality and high standard.
That is an excellent point. I think so. The pandemic definitely has helped us and in the way we have sort of accelerated the use of technology and how we can be at par with any of the nations across. So with that, sir, if at all we have to think about the lessons learned and how we should be looking into the future, any thoughts that you have, whether we should continue to do what we are doing currently? Are there anything more initiatives that need to be considered or anything that the industry can do?
In fact, this COVID systematic and emergency based, because everybody assumes that what we did during COVID, we can do it now. But actually, it's not so. I mean, people talk about new normal. Basically, it's not a new normal. But one thing has happened in this 2 years' time, no, 3 years' time, no? The regulatory authorities and government are very kind of pragmatic about talking. So I've seen a lot of different forums where industry, is able to talk, inform about what they want, what are the still bottlenecks, so listening to what has happened, in terms of what is required to be done. So at the same time, I think the young professionals who were all worried about what will happen during COVID and will I lose my job, I think now looks like that things are stable. They are also stable, so obviously they are able to contribute to what they were doing with more vigor. I see more openings coming up, so probably we are turning the tide and learnings of COVID are going to be useful. But as I said, no learning is only positive. So obviously, the lessons of doing fast work, but is it quality and is it ethical work? I think that challenge has to be maintained as forefront. My worry is that, or rather concern is that we as an industry or the clinical research society, we need to prepare sites better. Because sometimes I feel that we could have done more. For example, the large study which was done by, Oxford group called Recovery Trial on Master Protocol, where they recruited about 11,000 patients in 2-3 months' time in UK. And they started looking at multiple drugs. Now, that's the kind of research which would help us a lot. But that would require ready centers all over India. And ready means they are ready to go from day one. It's not that we have to start searching for patients and the systems and ethics committee. So that's where I think our major thrust should be as a society, that can we develop a large number of centers which are going to do part of large trials. We have now learned that in India can be done. How are we going to ensure that the sites which are involved? But the vaccine trials are of a different couple. Vaccine trials were more in healthy people. So it may be easier to do a healthy people-based vaccine trial, phase 3, which is over in about, let's say, 2 months' time, where you're only measuring endpoints like antibodies. But when you're looking at a recovery kind of trial, where you're looking at hard endpoints of oxygen requirement, or ventil requirement, I think it has to be that the sites are not just geared up to health, but also to how to ensure people who are seriously, disease like people with COVID. So can we be ready with large number of centers? That would be my personal thinking, that can we do it fast? Can we do it enough? Because that's only possible if we now go beyond the big metro cities, second level metro cities or second towns. For example, I would be very happy that if we can say someday, like we say in USA, that USA has 50,000 investigators. I think even today, after so many years, we don't have 50,000. We maybe have 5,000 or 10,000. I'm not sure. No? If we can say, every potential doctor in practice is willing to be part of clinical research and do good quality work, that is the way, I think India will be able to really contribute global drug development and also innovative local drug development. So we have a lot of work to do. Now the speed has come because of COVID 2 years. Now I think we should make the best use of this foundation, the positive outlook to research, quality clinical trials coming in India, and obviously regulatory pragmatism. These all should help us spurring the innovation in years to come.
Yeah, very well said, sir. I think so. You have touched nicely on all the points. So, sir, coming probably to the last question that I had is, we have talked more about the clinical trials, but I was thinking, if India is to be a very smart and viable setting for clinical trials, so not only for clinical, but probably also for data and any other domains wherein, there could be more work which can be done through India. So what do you think, why India should be considered for all the domains of clinical trials?
Yeah, that's a very good, important point, because clinical trials means not just patient, but also data. And these data, I think, are very important to collect in the right way. I think now, I would say, we were already, part of a lot of global data management, groups. Some were obviously more of outsourced work, but I think a large number of people were doing in India data management, statistics, pharmacovigilance, all that is there, already as a background. But obviously, now I think with the open communication, and I think the digital route becoming, more preferred, it should be easier for us to, get into this. Obviously, the barriers like, data privacy and data protection have to be, understood. And we have to be aware that whilst doing, global work in India, we don't, compromise on the global expectations of GDPR kind of things. In data management, statistics, medical writing, pharmacovigilance, I think one can now have professionals, a large number, and the numbers will increase because it can be, you know, the requirements are no big numbers, because I mean, I'm aware that no, some of the big pharma now is kind of doing a lot of work on medical writing in India of different nature. I've even seen a lot of specialization there. No, it was not just clinical study report now. Now I see requests for protocols, or request for publications. We see requests for regulatory writing, you know, packet labels. Earlier it was only case processing. But now I can see, you know, that people are looking more. I'm aware of, I've seen medical experts sitting in India and doing medical monitoring for phase one trials, which are actually going on in USA. So there is a kind of a capability development happening in the field. And I think with the numbers which we have in India, you know, what we call demographic dividend, it's easier, you know, people to look at India as a kind of a center. You can have not just, you know, a clinical trial contribution. And one more thing, I'm just thinking aloud that, you know, the lean phase we got for clinical trials, you know, for some years because of these issues, you know, media and legal. Your, you know, medical writing or data management or pharmacovigilance will not suffer, because that's more like a global unit sitting in India. And there's a lot of investment going on of that kind of different companies.
Yes, in fact, in my current organization, Bioralgesy, also we have a team wherein we have medical monitors who are supporting also, not only in India, but trials are done outside of India. We have a big data sciences team, as well as quality team who are supporting the global operations. And I know many other companies also have similar kind of setups. In fact, some of them have very large number of people wherein they have employed very good, young, talented professional. And I think so that's our plus point being in India, the availability of good talent pool, which brings a very uniqueness. And also because of the sheer numbers, even the if we have to replace or we have to increase the number, that's also something which is possible. So thank you, Doctor. As always, it was a pleasure talking to you.
Thank you very much for this interesting conversation. And I think I also got a chance to learn views of, you know, a youngster who is still kind of, you know, in the industry, you know, looking at things pragmatically. So I'm very happy to be part of this conversation.
Thank you for listening to the latest episode of Few and Far Between. If you enjoyed this podcast or have suggestions for future episodes, please get in touch with us. You can email us at fewandfarbetween@biorossi.com or contact us on our website at biorossi.com.